So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, read some pastime here about Lord Balaram. And this pastime of Danaka, killing Danaka, is quite interesting pastime. The ass demon, Danaka, sometimes called Garbada Asura. In other shastras, it's talked about Garbada Asura Mardana, the killing of the ass demon, Danaka. And this is one forest of Vrindavan, known as Talavan, a van full of tal trees. And there's a type of mystery which comes from the tal tree, which is called tal mystery. And that tal tree is a palm tree, something like a date. Date tree is also palm. But this has a purple color fruit, and inside looks like a lychee. It's about as big as a cricket ball, to put it into common understanding. Big as a cricket ball. And it's purple outside, like an eggplant. And inside it has a consistency and white color. And they're very sweet. Even today they grow in Vrindavan. Like chico, very nice taste. And they give off a very... When they're ripe, they give off a heavy fragrance. I think you're all familiar with guava. What do you call guava? What is it called? Amrud. So Amrud, this... you're rude also. I'm rude, but you're also rude. I'm rude, you're rude. And Ani rude. So Amrud is guava. And guava, as you know, when you buy it, it gives off a heavy fragrance. You can't not know that guava is in your house. To me, I'm a little bit allergic to guava. I don't know if I'm allergic, but I don't. If guava's in the kitchen, I don't like the smell. It's too heavy. It's just the whole house becomes guava-ized. That smell is a heavy smell. So tal fruits, they have a very nice smell. And very sweet and attractive. And it carries for long distance. The coward boys, they were playing nearby there. And their noses caught the fragrance of the ripened tal fruits, and that made their mouths water with interest. They became interested to taste the fruits that they were smelling. So this is Pogunda Leela, Krishna Balaram's Leela, Dauji and Kaniya. Their Leela is divided into three parts, Komara, Pogunda and Kaishora. So Pogunda is from the age of from 5 till 10 is Pogunda Leela. So at this time in Pogunda Leela, Krishna was staying in Chatikar. And this Bali Leela from 0 to 3, he was staying in Gokul. And then he shifted in the end of Gokul. And the end of his Kumar Leela, he shifted over to Chatikar. So from Chatikar, he would go on various outings with the coward boys after he was 6 years old. On Gopastami and Kartik in his sixth year, then he was given charge of the cows. He got his graduation, cow tending graduation. His undergraduate school was with calves, Vatsa school. And he was taking care of the calves only in the area of the village, in the Chatikar. Chatikar means like chata, like an umbrella, half circle of wagons, bail, gadi, bullock carts. So this is their settlement. They were nomadic people on the move. Nanda Baba, Abhira caste. So they were not fixed in their place in Nandagam. They moved from Gokul and they stayed in Chatikar for 3 or 4 years. Then they went back to Nandagaon, which was the ancestral home of Nanda Maharaj's father, Devamida, Parjanya, or Devamida. And due to the attack of Keshi had come, this is told in the Garga Samhita, and also Harivansa Puran, which are now in English. This demon Keshi, although he was the last demon to attack Krishna in his Vrindavan Leela, but he also was living before Krishna was born, and he was also attacking Vrindavan. He attacked Krishna's relatives, even in Nandagaon, way before Krishna was appeared in Gokul. So the relatives of Nanda Maharaj, Deva Mita and Parjanya, they were harassed by this Keshi demon. And he was a man-eating horse, and he was huge, and he was like a big, like a Rakshasa. It's described in Harivansh Purana. Wherever the Keshi demon, this is the, would come in Vrindavan, and he would stay in the Vrindavan somewhere. Then he would eat all these animals, cows. He would eat so many cows and people, and everybody was deathly afraid of this Keshi demon. And so when he would live somewhere, his whole residence where he was living was all surrounded with dead carcasses that he had eaten up and gobbled up. There was a big stink coming from there. So he was very ferocious, and people were afraid they were going to get eaten by. He was eating people and eating animals, and he's quite a terrible creature, Keshi. So then he somehow, they fled actually, Nanda Maharaj's relatives, they all fled and moved to Gokul, Mahavan, Brihadvan, out of fear of Keshi. And so then the whole cycle of demons started over there. When Krishna was born, Putana came after 6 days and Krishna killed her. And then after 3 months, Shakatasura, and then after 1 year, Trinavarta, and the demons came one by one. So they left there, and they went to Chatikar, and they stayed for some time. So then Krishna took the cows one day during his Boganda Leela, and that's told here. And we can read this Sanskrit. Shishukavacha tatascha Boganda Vaya Shrito Vraje Vuvatusto Pashupala Samato Kaschari Yanto Sakibi Samam Pader Vrindavanam Punyam Ativa Chakratu. Shukadeva Goswami said, when Lord Rama and Lord Krishna attained the age of Poganda while living in Chatikar in Vrindavan, the coward men allowed them to take up the task of tending cows. Engaging thus in company of their friends, the two boys rendered the land of Vrindavan most auspicious by imprinting it with the marks of the lotus feet. So their feet have different marks on the bottom. And those are very awesome. Vrindavanam Punyativa Chakratu. So as they wandered all around Vrindavan, those imprints or those marks on the bottom of their feet, they would be left there in the sand. Snat Goswami writes in Gopal, no, in Vaishnav Toshini, that Krishna's footprints were always decorating and adorning the land of Vrindavan. And the residents, the human beings, coward boys, and gopis, and even the animals and beasts, the buffalo, the cow, and even tigers and lions, they had so much regard for Krishna's footprints. And they also recognized them. So whenever they would see them, even though there were lakhs of cows, they would somehow manage to step over Krishna's footprints or around them. And in this way, the land of Vrindavan was always decorated with Krishna's footprints. No one would step on them and wipe them out or mix them up. So now they're 6 years old, the boys are 6 years old, and they've taken up the task of tending the cows. So the first thing they do when they tend the cows is they leave the pasturing grounds. So this chapter is all about cow herding and playing with his friends. And Balaram also is praised here by Krishna. And Dainakasura gets knocked off. And then they protect the cows from Kaliya. So this is a pretty busy year. At the end of their 5th year, Krishna and Balaram were permitted to herd the cows. The first day of cow herding is described in the Padma Puran. And Gopastami, which we celebrate every year, Gopastami, by worshipping the cows and putting handprints on them with turmeric paste. You see the Vrijvasis, they make turmeric paste and put their handprints on the side of the white cows. Have you ever seen? You must have seen pictures. So this is an expression of their love for the cow. So Krishna became an official gopa when he was 6 years old. Previously attended cows. Krishna Balaram decorated the land of Braj with their beautiful footprints, which had the 19 different symbols on the bottom, such as flag and triangle and chakra and barley corn. The marks on Krishna's feet and Balaram's feet, they made Vrindavan extremely auspicious. Previously, since Krishna's feet were very soft and small, the impressions of the flag and other symbols were very faint. But now, the marks were very clear. It says, Ativa. It says, Vrindavanam punyam ativa chakratu. So the marks on Krishna's feet, Ativa. Ativa means excessively. Tanmadavo venam udirayan brato gopher ganad bi sayasho balanvita pashun paraskritya pashyavam avishad vihartu kama kusamakarambanam. Desiring to enjoy pastimes, Lord Madhav, sounding his flute, surrounded by the gopas, who were chanting his glories and accompanied by Baladev, kept the cows in front of them, and they entered the Vrindavan forest, which was full of flowers and rich with nourishment for the animals. Krishna entered Vrindavan forest, he repeats, which was rich with nourishment, pashavyam. This prefix, vishad, means, avishad, means he completely entered the forest. In other words, with great absorption. So why are they calling Krishna Madhav? Because Madhav means spring season, the months of the year. We have Chaitra and Vaishak. These are our names, but then there's also Bhagavan's names are also there. Every month of the year is named after Bhagavan. Like we say, Magmas, we say Mag, Falgun, Chaitra, Baishak, Jaist, Ashad, Shravan, Bhadra, Ashwin, Kartik, Mrigashirsha, Posh. This is a... I think I got them all. But then there's the names of Krishna, which are very much similar to the marks of Tilak we put on. There's 12 marks of Tilak in 12 months. So Magmas or January, this is called Madhav month. Then February is maybe Govinda. And then, of course, Kartik is Damodar month. Everyone knows that. And there's Padmanabh month, and there's Trivikra month, and there's Madhav month, and there's Padmanabh month, and Vasudev month. All these basic marks of Tilak are there as names of the month. The months are named after Vishnu. So this is one Vedic way of naming a child. He can be named, of course, the Janam Nakshatra is there on a particular syllable, or he can be named after the syllable of the presiding lord of the month. So this is Madhav Krishna. Madhava. It says he's referring to Krishna as Madhav, which means spring season, because Chaitra month, which is March and April, and then April, May is Vaishak, Chaitra Vaishak. This is spring, March and April. So March, the month of March, is called Madhav. The Shukadev is referring to Krishna as Madhav because Krishna is like the spring, and he causes the forest to rejoice with fragrant flower blossoms. When springtime comes and the forest blossoms, swarms with all kinds of wonderful flowers, and becomes very fragrant and attractive. So, Krishna is that Madhav. And they also say that Madhav means dava and mud. Dava means, like we have this ashava. This means a fermented drakshashava. There's different Ayurvedic wines, or actually Ayurvedic wines, which are used as tonics, liver tonic, Kumari Asava, it's for women, Kumari Asava, 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 and then Rishta, Saraswat Rishta. So these are fermented Ayurvedic products. Not very strong fermentation, but natural fermentation. So that means Ava, and then Mada means intoxication or mad. So Krishna is that liquor, Madhava, which makes everyone mad. So another meaning here of Madhava is that when Krishna enters the forest in Vrindavan, all the creatures of the forest become mad. Even the trees become mad. Madha. Madha means intoxicated, madness. Kam, krodh, loh, mo, madha. Matsarya. Madha means to be mad or intoxicated. When you're intoxicated, you're crazy or mad. So Madhava. He is that liquor, that asava, that fermented amrit, which intoxicates the forest creatures. The trees tremble in ecstasy, and the leaves start trembling, and they start crying tears of joy in the form of honey falling down their trunks from their beehives. And this is their crying. The honey is their tears rolling down their faces, the trunks. And the birds start crying, Krishna, Krishna, in separation. So this way, what to speak of when Krishna goes in the forest and starts playing his flute? Jaya Keshava Kali Mala. What is it? Keshava Kali Mala. Radhe. Jaya Madhava Madana Murari Radhe Sham. Jaya Madhava Madana Murari Sham. Radhe Sham. Shama Sham. Jaya Madhava Madana Murari. So Madhava Madana Murari. So this is this Murari. He plays, goes in the forest and plays his flute. And the gopis drink the liquor of that flute sound, that nectar, madira, that amrit, that intoxicating wine, and they become mad. And they also run in the forest and join all the maddened creatures. The deer are maddened. The peacocks are maddened and dancing in mad ecstasy. So Krishna makes the whole world mad. So that's what's being also said here. Tanmanjago shali mrigadvijakulam mahanmana prakya paya saraswati vatena jishtam shatapacha gandina nirikshirantam bhagavan mano dade. The Supreme Personality of Godhead looked over that forest, which resounded with the charming sounds of bees, animals and birds, and which was enhanced by a lake whose clear water resembled the minds of great souls, and by a breeze carrying the fragrance of 100-petaled lotuses. Seeing all of this, Krishna decided to enjoy the auspicious atmosphere. So he thought, this is a wonderful, beautiful forest. Beautiful sights, beautiful sounds, beautiful fragrances. Beautiful sense of touch. The wind is carrying this gentle breeze. And it's touching my skin. All my senses are being enlivened. If you tease my skin or tease my eyes or my tongue, I get excited to enjoy. If you say, open your mouth, and you put some rasgula on the end of your tongue and say, you want this rasgula? Oh, okay. So all your senses at once are getting stimulated and attracted and excited, and naturally the whole sum total of that experience is you want to enjoy it. Your mind becomes interested to immerse itself in enjoying the scenery and interacting with everyone. So that's why we see in our dealings, which we're not so much entering the forest with our cows and friends, but we're moving in the world with people. And so when the wife prepares to meet the husband, and she has so many kinds of perfumes and fragrances and colors and jingles and jangles and, you know, waist bells and ankle bells and bangles tinkling and jingling and all kinds of fragrances oozing off her body and unguents. And so this way the man's senses become inundated, the ear, little tinkle-tinkle in his ears and fragrance in his nose. And then she speaks some enticing words to him, and then maybe she touches him, and then, it's all over. The enjoying spirit is inflamed. And then it's Haribo, bye-bye, Maya. So Krishna is the original enjoyer, the supreme enjoyer, Purush Uttam. Purush means enjoyer. He's Purushottam. Krishna decided to play because he's the play lord. He's the lord of play. What do we say? If you want to live with the lord of play, you have to chant your days away. Right? You've heard that?
Yes.
It's one of our limericks or whatever you call it. Riddles. Limericks, maybe. So he saw this Leela Lord, Lord of Leela, Lord of Play. He's the Lord of Play. He's a playful Lord. And he only plays. He's playing. It's all a play. He decided to play on seeing the beauty of the forest, which gave joy to the five senses. How did the forest satisfy Krishna's senses? The humming of the birds and the melodious singing of the deer and birds brought sweet pleasure to Krishna's ears. Vrindavan was served by gentle lotus-scented breezes carrying the cool moisture of transparent lakes filled to the brim with cool, sweet-tasting water, which you can't have. But if you insist, then in love there's no rules. Like the minds of great devotees. So this analogy here, that's also given in the Sanskrit by Shuka Muni. Mahan mana prakyapaya saraswata. Mahan mana, mahan mana prakyapaya. The mahan, the mahajanas, the mahants, the great souls, they have this type of mind. What type of mind? What is the mind of the great devotees? It's all these analogies of Vrindavan. Vrindavan, these qualities and attributes of the Vrindavan forest, which are serving Krishna, are giving rise in the mind of Shukadeva Goswami to remember the minds of great devotees. The minds of great devotees are saturated with Vrindavan, obviously. Mora mane habe Vrindavan mana. When Lord Chaitanya was traveling, then Advaita said, your mind is Vrindavan. Habe man. Your mind is Vrindavan. So what is the nature of the Vrindavan mind? The devotee mind, the advanced devotee's mind, there's some attributes, some qualities of his mind which are being told here. Gentle lotus-scented breezes carrying the cool moisture of transparent lakes filled to the brim with cool, sweet-tasting water like the minds of great devotees. So the minds of great devotees, the first characteristic is that they're cool. They're cool. They're not burning with lust and burning with greed. Kam krodh. Dushparina. They're like fire. Kam krodh lobh. So then they're cool. Their minds are very cool. And they're also transparent. They're clear. Transparent means clear. See-through. You come to the lake and you stand at the top on the bank of the lake, and you look over and you can see the fish swimming in the water. And below the fish you can see the gems and Chintamani stones on the bottom of the lake, glimmering their blue color and their red color and their green color. Because it's transparent, clear water. So the mind of an advanced devotee is transparent, it's clear. When you look into the mind of the pure devotee, you can see many colors there. You can see this beautiful blue color there, Sham. Krishna. And you can see this beautiful golden color of Radharani. And when you see that those colors mixing, they become emerald green. Because when you combine gold and blue, you get green. Back to our art class. Blue and yellow make green. Red and blue make purple. And there you have it. Infrared to ultraviolet. So, their minds are cool, they're transparent, and they're filled to the brim with cool, sweet-tasting water. So the lakes are, this is obvious, the lakes are full, as we see Radhakund with every rainfall, it fills up. 2 weeks ago there were 4 steps, 1 week ago there were 3 steps, now there's 2 steps, and it keeps coming, there'll be 1 step, then there'll be no steps. And then we have Gaurakund. Radhakund? No. Shyamakund? No. Gaurakund. That's when the two become one. When Radha Krishna Yugal become one, they become Gauranga, Lord Gaura. So that's happened many years, especially years. The two kunds, they meet together at the Sangam, 6 inches, 8 inches of Prem Ras over the Sangam. So you can't see the Sangam. You can see the Shilas of Giriraj, but actually the steps of the Sangam, the platform that you walk on, you walk through water. So there's one continuous water level. Shyamakund and Radhakund is a continuous water level which takes in the actual Sangam. It doesn't cover, of course, there's a big 10-foot temple there. It doesn't go that high, at least so far. If it does that, it will be in our living room. If it goes that high, we'll be inside Radhakund right now. Shri Radha Kunda Ki Jai. So let's look at this point here. Sukadeva Goswami is saying the minds of the Mahan Mana, the minds of great souls, great devotees, they have this third characteristic. They're cool, they're transparent, cool, not burning, they're cool, peaceful, composed, because they're always remembering Krishna, speaking about Krishna. And they're transparent. You can see Radha and Krishna through their minds. And then the third quality is given here is that says they're filled to the brim with sweet-tasting water. Cool, sweet-tasting water. So what does that mean when applied to a Mahan Mana, the mind of a great devotee? That means his mind, the mind of a great devotee, is filled to the brim with sweet Madhurya Ras. Because the name for water is Ras. Krishna says in Gita, Rasoham Apsukonteya, Prabhasmi Shashasuryo. I am the taste of water, Rasoham Apsukonteya. I am the light of the sun and moon, Prabhasmi Shashasuryo. So this is what we see. The mind is filled with sweet tasting Ras. So it's madhur, sweet, honey, madhu, honey or shahad. It's sweet-tasting ras, and it's filled, and his mind is filled. It's sweet, but he's tasting it. The great devotee is tasting that ras, and he distributes it to others. So someone associates with the mind and actions and speaking of the great devotee, then he gets some taste. The talks of an advanced devotee are very tasty. Actually very relishable to the mind of the devotee. So the Vrindavan mind has these three attributes that are indicated in this verse by Shivadeva Goswami. Then he goes on. The cool winds thrill Krishna's sense of touch. You would probably like to have some more cool winds here. But if you get too thrilled, I don't know what would happen. And if I get too thrilled, I'll get chilled. So the sweet water stimulated Krishna's sense of taste. So there was no karapani in those days. All the lakes of Vrindavan today are karapani, not mitai. Mitai. Mitai pani. But in Krishna's time, everything was sweet. Madhurya Dham Vrindavan Ki Jai. Madhurya Purushottam Sri Krishna Ki Jai. Madhurya Leela Ki Jai. Madhurya Nam Ki Jai. But now all what it was sweet has become salty. Because before the gopis would relish the sweetness of Krishna there. So the sweetness of Krishna would permeate those lakes, and the sweetness of their heart was mixed with the sweetness of Krishna's heart, and all the rasa of their heart and the rasa of Krishna's heart would fill those lakes to the brim with sweet-tasting rasa, prem rasa. Every lake was filled with prem rasa, because in every lake they had their pastimes. But then Krishna left and went to Mathura. So then the gopis would go to those lakes, and they would remember, they would sit there and say, "Oh, Sakhi, oh, Lita, remember Naukavihar? Remember Jalkeli? Remember Lukaluki, hide and seek, when Krishna hid among the lotus flowers and we tried to find him?" And they would start remembering the different pastimes in the different lakes, Manasi Ganga, Pavan Sarovara, Prem Sarovara, Shrikund, Shamkund, Kishorikund, Banukund, Tohanikund, Motikund, Lukalukikund. So many kunds. They would stand, they would sit by the banks of the river and sing the pastimes of Krishna, remember them, and then cry. Cry, cry, and keep crying. And where would all their tears go?
In the kund.
All the tears of the gopis would go in the kund. And what are tears? Are tears sweet or salty?
Salty.
Salty. So the kund had 100 liters or 1,000 liters of sweet water, but if you pump in 3,000 liters of salt water, what happens to the sweet water?
Salty.
Becomes salty, becomes displaced and replaced, driven out. So that's what happened to the kunds of Vrindavan. Shama kunda, Radha kunda, Pavan Sarovara, Prem Sarovara, every single kund tastes like salt water. Because the gopis are crying even now for Krishna. So this is a problem. How to make the... So that's the nature of our minds. Our minds are a little salty. A little bit salty. Do you know the quality of salt? One of the qualities of salt is burning, heating. You want to find out? You experiment? Cut your hand and put salt in it. See what happens. Does it become cool? It starts burning. So when our minds are salty, that means they're burning. Right? So these lust and greed, they're salty qualities. So they burn the mind. So they're not salty, but the great souls are sweet tasting water like the sweet minds. Satachataruna palava shriha falaprasunoru parena padayam. Sri Shachikan Vikshya Vanaspatin Mudha Smayan Ivagra Jamadi Purushaha. The primeval lord saw that the stately trees of Vrindavan, with their beautiful reddish buds and their heavy burden of fruits and flowers, were bending down to touch his feet with the tips of their branches. Thus, Krishna smiled gently and addressed his elder brother, Dauji. Krishna smiled to see all the trees with their reddish leaf buds, fruits and flowers bending down to touch his feet. Krishna knew that the trees were actually bowing down to worship him. But since it was improper to glorify himself, he smiled in great bliss and instead praised his elder brother, who is Balaram! Dauji Maharaj ki! Thus he addressed his brother in this verse as Adi Purush. Because he is the Adi Purush. He's the origin of the Purush avatars. Is that right? So the Adi Purush is Balaram. Krishna began to laugh, or at least almost laugh, in order to hide his intentions from Balaram. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it is said, when the sweetness of Vrindavan and its inhabitants became prominent in Krishna's mind, he began glorifying them by making Balaram the object of his praise. However, Krishna was actually praising himself, because the verses do not depict Balaram's glories. Out of Sakya Bhav, Krishna speaks his own glories in a joking way in the name of Balaram. Though Krishna is the younger brother of Balaram, in this verse, Krishna is addressed as Adi Purush to denote his position as Swayam Bhagavan, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is interesting, because in the first paragraph, it says Krishna addresses Balaram as Adi Purush. So he's turning to his brother and saying, "Oh, Adi Purush," but he's actually saying, "I'm the Adi Purush." And they're actually bending down to touch my feet, because they recognize me as such, that I, Krishna, am the Swayam, the origin of even you, Balaram, although we're both the personality of Godhead. But he is the original, because Eko Bahusham, in the beginning there was one. Who is that one?
Swayam Bhagavan.
Krishna! Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Aho Ami Deva, Paramarachitam. Padam bhujam te sumana falarhanam namantyupadaya shikabdiratmanas tamopahatye tarojanmayat kritam. Krishna said to his brother, he says, Ami Deva, Vara. He says, Vara, like Govardhan, Deva Vara, Deva Vara. O greatest of lords, just see how these trees are bowing their heads at your lotus feet, which are worshipable by the immortal demigods. The trees are offering you their fruits and flowers to eradicate the dark ignorance that has caused their birth as trees. In other words, we do engage in sukriti or punya to counteract the papa fall, which has befelled us, so to speak. We suffer from various inequities due to our previous life sins, physical or mental or emotional. So there are various prayaschitta measures that one can do in this life to counteract the wrong choices in his previous life and try to improve the situation or rectify the situation. So the trees are acting like human beings. They're offering obeisances to Krishna. But Krishna is attributing the cause of this to being his brother's entrance into the forest. But actually, the trees are recognizing Krishna. And the purport is there. Knowing the minds of the trees who wanted to worship his lotus feet. The trees wanted to worship. So that's the thing. Krishna knows the mind of the worshipper. This is what we don't even know our own mind. If we did, we'd be in a lot better shape. But our mind is a great mystery. What to speak of other people, they can't figure anything out about us. We can hardly figure out half of what's going on in our mind. And our friends and acquaintances, they don't have the slightest idea. But Krishna knows the good stuff. The bad stuff he leaves to the demigods to sort out. Ketu and Rahu and Jupiter, they sort out the bad samskaras and good ones. But Krishna is looking for the spark of spirit, the spark of intention, good intentions, good spiritual desires, and that he's interested in. So he knows if we want to worship him, and he knows if we're serious about loving him, and he knows if we're serious about returning to him, and he knows if we're serious about surrendering unto him. He knows it very well. We don't have to send him a courier mail. We don't have to inform him. Before we inform him, he already knows. So therefore, he makes suitable arrangements according to the sincerity of our purpose. So here, it says he knows the minds of the trees. So you're studying all these subjects, biology and all these things. So where is the mind of the tree located? So Krishna glanced at the trees and he spoke to Balaram about their glories, as if the trees were great devotees. Balaram, the trees holding gifts of fruits and flowers on their heads are bowing down to your lotus feet with devotion. Why? They bow to purify themselves of their offenses, which have caused them to take birth as trees. They are thinking, because we have committed such grave offenses, we have become trees and cannot accompany the Lord and wander around with the other cowherd men and boys through the village of Vrindavan. We're restricted. Stavara jangama, stavara jangama. They can't move. In this way, Krishna interprets the trees' movements stemming from their attraction to himself. However, since Brahma previously prayed to be born as a tree in Braj, the trees could not have been born as a result of offenses. In the material world, Prabhupada often said the trees are Mayavadis. So once Achyutananda Swami, he told Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, I want to get a chainsaw and cut down all the Mayavadis. Because we preach our enemies are the Mayavadis. So Prabhupada once said that actually Mayavadis have taken birth, all these trees in America, they're all Mayavadis. So then Achyutananda said, Prabhupada, I want to get a chainsaw and go cut down all those trees. That's a joke. So Prabhupada said, no, that's not a good idea. It's because we want to get rid of the Mayavadis. So we'll liberate all the Mayavadis by cutting their bodies and they die. Get out of that body. So, but it's not the same way in the spiritual world in Vrindavan. These trees are all great devotees. That's what he's saying. Krishna's saying these trees are great devotees, rishis and devotees. And we see in the Mahatmyam, Vrindavan Mahatmyam, even 500 years ago, or maybe now, if Krishna's saying 5,000 years ago, these trees are not Mayavadis. These trees are not sinful jivas that take birth as a tree due to a curse. Why do you take birth as a tree? Because you're a Mayavadi? Why do you take birth as a tree? Because you go naked in public? If you go naked in public, you become a tree? You know, all these ladies lying in the French Riviera and in the Mediterranean Sea and Los Angeles Beach and their nude beach, naked beach, Goa Beach. I think Goa. They have a section of Goa Beach is naked. So all the Europeans go there and lie in the sun naked. So they all become palm trees in Goa in their next life. And none of the Indians are going to stare at them in the next life. Hey, look at that palm tree, man. Wow, check it out. That palm tree has blonde hair, man. No, palm trees have green leaves. And they're kind of pointed and they hurt. If you touch them, you could cut your hand. And the bark is all rough and you don't want to touch the bark. But if that girl's from Norway, you want to touch her bark. Right? But when that Swedish girl becomes a palm tree in the sands of Goa, I don't think you'll be jumping on top of her. Right? But this is the penalty for nudity. You ever hear of Nala Kuvera, Mani Griva?
Yes.
What were they? They were devas. The sons of Kubera. The Kubera is Mr. Rockefeller, right? World Bank. Kubera is in charge of the Universal Bank. He's a big daddy. He has all the money. And his sons got proud, puffed up. They thought they could drive around in no clothes. So Narada Muni blessed them, benediction cursed, that they became trees in Gokul. And Krishna and Damodar liberated them. So this is the general tendency that birth in trees is due to nudity or impersonalism. You can't say much when you're a tree. Can't even bark at the moon. If a Mayavadi becomes a dog, then he can bark at the moon and still make protest at Krishna's energies. The moon is Krishna's devotee, Chandra. So if the Mayavadi dies and becomes a dog, he can still protest. Because when he's a human being, he's protesting. He's speaking all nonsense from his mouth. He's barking all nonsense phrases and stupid talks. So that Mayavadi becomes a dog in his next life, that's too good. We shouldn't let him have that fortune. Because then he can go, oh, ho, ho, ho. And then he sees a devotee, hey, there's Braj Mohan. Oh, ho, 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 ho. He can start barking Mayavadi slogans. Right? Rao, rao. Brahman, Brahman. Brahman, Brahman. Brahman, Brahman. Right? When they're barking, Brahman, Brahman.
Brahman, 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 Brahman.
So Krishna doesn't give such a privilege. The Mayavadi can't even become a dog. He becomes a tree, because trees don't bark at the moon, and trees don't bark at devotees. The moon is a vibhuti of Krishna, Krishna's energies. So the Mayavadis are offenders to Krishna and his energies. Devotees are Krishna's energies, and the Mayavadis offend the devotees, and they offend the Lord. Krishna has no face, no arms, no hand, no nirgun, nirup, nirakar. This is what they say. But trees in Vrindavan are different. Brahma wanted to be born as a tree. Uddhav Mahashaya, the great Haridas, Gomalata Oshadinam, he wanted to be born as a Gomalata, or a medicinal plant, or a creeper climbing a tree. So we see that 5,000 years ago, the trees were in Vrindavan, are great sages. They're doing puja of Balaram and Krishna with whatever they have in their hand, they're offering. It's called manarpanam, madarpanam, Krishna arpan. Whatever we have in our hand, we offer to Krishna. This is karma yoga. Whatever you have, you offer to God. This verse is there in 9th chapter, 27th verse in Gita. Yat karoshi rashnashi yat juhoshi dadasi yat yat tapasis kanteya mat karushvat madarpanam. Mat karushva madarpanam. Madarpan. Manarpanam. Arpanam means worship, puja, archan, arpanam. So the Krishna is telling, this is karma yoga, whatever you have, offer to God. So this is the, do something, get connected. You're a yogi, you're doing austerities because you want mystic power. Anyway, offer the result of those austerities of Vishnu at least. So these trees, so what do they have in their hand? They have their branches, they have their leaves, they have their fruits, their flowers, they're bending down, they're showing namas. They're doing their namas. They're bending down to Krishna. Namaste. And they're great devotees, because great devotees, they bow down. When they see the Lord, what do? They bow down. This is the behavior. When you see the Lord or his devotees, you bow down. Even when you see the king, you bow down. So the trees are great devotees. Great devotees are taking the form of trees. Nalakuvera, Manigriva, they're demigods. They're also devotees, but they're intoxicated and covered over. They're a Vishnu Bhaktas. Had to be. If they were Mayavadis, they'd be born in trees, not in the holy dham, to get the privilege of getting liberated by Krishna. Not possible. He not only liberated them, he gave them prema bhakti. So that's also told. They went back to the heavenly planets to finish their lifespan there, and after that, they got prema bhakti in Siddhadeva. Radhe Radhe. So this is the 5,000 years ago, it was like this. These are trees. Great devotees, bowing down, offering the fruits. Fruits is the best thing they have. What is the best thing a tree has? Is it the leaves? You would like to eat mango leaves. And decorate your altar with them, or decorate your yajnashala, or your griha pravesh with mango garland. It's auspicious. Or you'd like to eat them? So what's the best offering? The best offering of a tree? What's the second best?
Flowers.
So what are the trees offering to Krishna?
Fruits
and flowers. In a humble way. Not just shaking and dropping them on Krishna's head. They could just shake a tree with fruits and the fruits fall on your head, right? No, they're bending down and offering at the feet. Because this is where offerings are made, at the feet. Etat padyam klim Krishnaya namaha. Etat padyam klim Gaurangaya namaha. Etat padyam, right? Idam pushpam, it's offered at the feet. Puja begins where? Where does puja begin? At the feet. You offer incense to the feet, you offer the flower to the feet. So, the trees are great devotees. So, as I said, in the glories of Vrindavan, we find that even as 5,000 years ago, the trees were devotees. Engage in puja. 500 years ago, the trees were also devotees. Right here at Radhakund, this point was established to remind everybody to be careful in Vrindavan. Das Goswami was excavating Shamakund and making it larger so that more devotees could come and take bath there. And then he had a dream of the Panch Pandava. Yudhisthira, Bhim, Arjun, Sahadev, Nakul. They came in a dream and they say, hey, wait, Are, You're going to make this. First you made Radhakund. Now you're making Shamakund. You're going to make a big square here, big rectangle like Radhakund. But if you do that, we're right on the edge here. We're all here in the form of trees. We've taken the form of briksha, trees here. Devotee trees to serve Radha and Krishna Vrindavan with our shade, with our fruits, with whatever we have. We're doing arpanam, Krishna arpanam, Radha Krishna arpanam, tad arpanam, matkarushva madarpanam, matkarushva madarpanam. And please, Das Goswami Pad, don't cut us down. So then he woke up, oh, most amazing dream. So he told the workers, please, don't make this kund like rectangle, like Radha kund. But I've just realized it's been revealed to me that any given tree here on the banks of Shamakund may be another great devotee. Maybe Narada Muni's here, Uddhava's here. Or any great devotee, Ambarish, Kunti, who knows? Draupadi. If the Pandava's there, can Draupadi be there? Yes, no?
Yes.
Possibly yes. Kunti can be there, yes. Or maybe Bhishma. Or Dhritarashtra, or anyone. I don't know about Dhritarashtra, maybe. But at least the favorable party, the members of the favorable party, the Krishna favorable party could be there. So Vidura could be there. So then Das Goswami ordered the workers go around the trees, zigzag. And any trees you go like, so if you see the perimeter, the boundary of Shamakund is zigzag, you see how it goes this way. There's so many trees on the banks. My friend Achyutananda, he was trying to write about the history of Radhakund, so he went all around here and there, collected copies of many, many pictures, old pictures of Radhakund from 19, as old as pictures go back, 1924, 1930, 33, 40, 50, 60. And he was showing me how the different years of the kund, what Shamakund and Radhakund looked like. Oh, so many trees, everywhere, trees. The whole Sangam, where you go there now, is all these Giriraj temples and all that. There was nothing there. There was like one structure there. Just one structure with the Giriraj, one Shila, nothing else. And either as you walk, you have to bow the branches. The whole Sangam was full of trees bowing, hanging over each kund or hanging just over Radhakund. You had to go under and the trees were going across. You had to go under the branches and walk across the Sangam. You know the Sangam?
Yes.
Where the two kunds meet. And these huge trees, and all around he showed different pictures from different sides of the kund. Unbelievable. So beautiful. And the water, there was no flowers in the water or anything. It was the same, like just water. But lots and lots of trees. Big, big trees. These huge trees like this. 6 feet in diameter. 8 feet in diameter. Big trees. Like tall and huge. Everywhere. And just... It was like you had to look for the kutirs who were just nestled here. So many, four or five trees in one kuti. Four or five trees. No Gopinath temple. Was there a Gopinath temple? Radha Gopinath and Baitak. Baitak was a little tiny thing there, just some dirt and some bunch of trees, all trees, and a little promenade of dirt. And there's no Gopinath temple. That was built, I don't know, 1950 or so. It's not very old. There's the Prachin Gopinath temple is where Nityananda's Baitak is. That's very old. We went there last night. Remember? Nityananda's sitting place. That's the original one. And then this is like a new one. So everywhere, all around the Janama's Baitak was just all solid trees there. Like a forest. And just boom, boom, boom. It's just, well, it was 1920, 80 years. It's like an asphalt jungle. Looks like Bombay or something. High-rise building. There's a five-story Manipuri Dharmashala there on the Shamakund side. You see, you look out my window, you see a huge structure there. That's so ugly. So a lot of changes. So if that was true 5,000 years ago, the Brahma may be one of those trees. And 500 years ago, the Pandavas. So that's a big gap, right? From 5,000 years ago, maybe demigods like Brahma were in the trees. or were, according to Krishna. And then you go 4,500 years later, 4,500 years later, 500 years ago, great devotees like the Pandavas, eternal associates of the Lord, they were in the trees. That's a big gap. Now, from 500 years ago to now is a very small gap, isn't it? So who's in these trees in my yard, or who's in any of the trees in Radhakund? Who are those devotees? We don't know. They could be anybody. Any great devotees could be living right in this yard. So therefore, that's why we try to take care of the trees and protect them from the wind so they don't get blown down. That's why we have that support band, that one neem tree. Because the wind was blowing so much before, the tree was about to come up out of the ground. It's not very much strong in the ground. It looks strong, but it's not, apparently. The whole ground was like an earthquake was around its roots. It was about to... So we had this big support there. You saw the big tree there. And then we give so much fertilizer, cow dung and care for the trees so they grow nicely. And every day we go and check them out and clean the leaves or whatever, do service, talk to them. Haridas especially, he's always singing to them. And that Karma said that singing is the best medicine for trees. They like singing better than everything. The trees of Vrindavan, they are great devotees of the Lord. They're greater than we are. They're born in Vrindavan. Where are we born? Are we born in Vrindavan? No. Are we always hearing Harikatha and Kirtan 24 hours a day? No. When it rains in Vrindavan, they say those are the tears of the gopis. Because what is rain? Rain is fresh water. There's two kinds of tears. There's tears of union and tears of separation. Tears of union are sweet and they're cool. Tears of separation are hot and they're salty. Two degrees and two tastes. Separation tears are salty and union tears are sweet. So when the gopis, when this rain comes, rain is not salty, it's sweet. They say the gopis' tears, they're meeting Krishna. Because it's Julin. And Radharani's in Barsana for 3 months. From Shravan Mas, and then Bhadra and Ashwin. And Kartik, she goes back to Yavat. So she comes for Julin and her birthday and Krishna's birthday. And Shraddh and Pind and all these things and so many festivals they have. So it's happy time. So that's why there's so many sweet tears falling. Very sweet time, Shravan. And today was the last day of Shravan. So it ended on a sweet note. Madaram Samapayat. So this is the situation here. So externally we're seeing there are trees with a particular designated name and quality, and they're auspicious and they're engaged in Krishna's service, but who are they actually? So we embrace these. There are Kalpavriksha trees. Why are they Kalpavriksha trees? Why are trees called Kalpavriksha trees in Vrindavan? We say the trees in Vrindavan are Kalpavriksha trees. Why do we say that?
Because devotees are...
Because they're devotees. And devotees are Kalpavriksha trees. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhayivacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavi. The devotee is a moving Kalpavriksha tree, and the trees in Vrindavan are stationary Kalpavriksha trees. If you want to get your wishes fulfilled in France, you have to come to Vrindavan. If you want to get your wishes fulfilled in Bombay, there's no Kalpavriksha trees in Bombay. Only here we have the Kalpavriksha trees. But there's the moving Kalpavriksha trees, the Vaishnavas, the pure devotees. So they go to Bombay, and they go to Delhi, and they go to Moscow. They go everywhere. Right? And the devotee can fulfill your desire, because what is our desire? Our desire is only one. There's only one desire. One original desire. One pure desire. One natural desire. One transcendental desire. We as the Atma have one desire, to love Krishna. And that's what the trees give. They give bhakti, Krishna bhakti. That's what devotees give. They give Krishna bhakti. Krishna Bhakti Pradayate. Krishna Bhakti Pradatta. The trees, Tulsi gives Krishna Bhakti, Krishna Bhakti Pradatta. The Vaishnavas give Krishna Bhakti Pradatta. The trees in Vrindavan give Krishna Bhakti. Because that's the only desire. What other desire is there? Any other desire you get from Mahamaya. And the other desires fulfilled by Mahamaya, Durga. Right? Or at least whatever you're entitled to get fulfilled, she makes the arrangement. So when you approach a Kapha Vriksha tree, you say, oh, I want a new car. You don't get it. you get the real desire that maybe you don't even know about. So this is the trees of Vrindavan. Krishna's very clever. He's glorifying his brother. Atelinas tava yashokila
lokatirtam kayantari purushanupatam vajante prayoami muni kanabavidya mukya gudam vanepi najahat yanagatma devam anaga anagatma devam. Aga
means sin. Ana aga daivam, sinless person or sinless atma. And he's going on, Krishna's going on in these two verses. Oh, original personality, Dauji, Baladev, these bees must all be great sages. So the trees are great sages, now even the bees are great sages. And they're the most elevated devotees of yours. Why? Because they are worshipping you. How? By following you along the path and chanting your glories. They're attracted to your fragrance of your body. Though you have disguised yourself within this forest, O sinless one Balaram, the bees refuse to abandon you, their worshipful Lord. They're stuck on you. The bees won't leave you. Chakravarti Thakur's purport. In these two verses, Krishna glorifies the birds and beasts of the forest. The bees are following you here, Balaram, and because they are attracted to the fragrance of your body. When you go to secret places for your intimate pastimes, where even your confidential associates cannot go, these bees cannot give you up, but keep following you. Although they follow you to secluded places, you do not become offended by them. For this reason, Krishna addresses Balaram as Anaka, sinless one. Those who concentrate on your intimate pastimes have become these bees. Well, there you have it. So if you become totally absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, you become a honeybee in Vrindavan. You become a big bee. Here there is the hint that Balaram is giving them mercy by permitting them to enter his confidential groves and freely relish the sweet fragrance of his beautiful body. So there's a lot being said here between the lines, because if you have some perfume and the cap is on the perfume, or the dakan, I think you call it dakan, the dakan is on the bottle, and you can't smell the content of the perfume. If you take off dakan nikaldo, then ganda daldo, or whatever, you can smell the ganda, you can smell the fragrance. So Balaram's, oh, he has all his dhoti on and his chadar and all these clothing. So the fragrance of his body is being somewhat subdued by the covering, the umbra. But the Nilambara, he wears blue dhoti because he's always absorbed in thinking of Krishna and thinking of serving Krishna in so many newer and newer ways. So he's covered. Balaram is covered with thoughts of Krishna. His mind is covered with thoughts of pleasing Krishna. His heart is covered with desires to please Krishna. So the covering, because he's always thinking of Krishna, so that covering and thought of thoughts and desires comes out as his Nilambara dhoti. Balaram wears a dark blue, sham blue dhoti, which you must have seen. Have you seen, no? Pictures of Balaram. So this is his focus of his life and activities, is to please his brother, Krishna. And that's generally true, even in Indian families. The older brother tries to make the younger brother happy. Isn't it? He looks out for him. This begins in the spiritual world where the older brother is always looking out for the younger brother. In fact, he protects him. Balaram protects Krishna. He's even assigned to do that. He's assigned to do that by Mother Yashoda. She says, listen, Dalji. Listen, Dal. Please, look after your brother. Keep an eye on Nandulal.